Mrs. Gomez, Ms. Lappin. Okay, you can start, Ms. Lappin. It's pretty quiet.
If Judge Rovner were here, she would say it's not because of the two of you.
I was going to say
the room is totally vacated, right? Yeah.
I thought we were going to have a great audience today. Good morning, and may it please the court. This case presents the issue of whether a police officer is entitled to immunity from suit when he signed an affidavit in support of a search warrant, which was based in part on the statements of a complaining witness. And the complaining witness, more than 3 years later, testifies inconsistently regarding matters averred in the affidavit. Here, the qualified immunity defense focuses on whether the inconsistent testimony alone establishes a prima facie case that the officer knowingly, intentionally, or with reckless disregard for the truth made false statements and that such false statements were necessary for the determination of probable cause by the court commissioner who issued the search warrant. Defendant Officer Rodolfo Gomez respectfully asserts that the later inconsistent statements of his complaining witness alone does not establish that he acted in bad faith when preparing the affidavit in support of the warrant to search the Becker home in August 2006. In looking at this particular issue, the court is presented with essentially a two-part or two-prong analysis by the Junkert case. The initial part of the analysis is to determine whether a materially similar affidavit previously failed to establish probable cause under the facts that were indistinguishable from the case at hand. And given the responsive brief from the plaintiff, appellee in this matter, no such case has been presented. In fact, in this particular case, in the Becker case, the subject affidavit was not challenged by the felon herself. In fact, she pled no contest to the charge of felon in possession of a firearm.
Now, anyone could have known where Sharon lived, that she was a convicted felon, and that Richard was a hunter. So what else about the information that Debbie gave Gomez establishes probable cause when you take out the information that should not have been in there?
In the context of his interviews of Ms. Capel, Officer Gomez determined that Ms. Capel was fearful of Sharon, her sister. She had initially called inquiring as to whether or not it was lawful for a felon to be in possession of a firearm. When Officer Gomez answered the gun hotline that night, his response to her was no, that it was not lawful. He spoke with her that night, and he had subsequent conversations with her in the information gathering process. Officer Gomez determined that Ms. Capel had been in the Becker home, that Sharon had showed her that she kept a handgun, a dark-colored handgun, in the area of her bed where she slept. There was some discrepancy as to whether or not it was kept under her pillow or in a holster right by her side of the bed. But clearly, whichever perception you have regarding how she described the location was in an area that was within control of Sharon Becker. It was on, you know, in an area on her side of the bed. In addition, Debbie had complained that Sharon, through Debbie's son, had conveyed that should Debbie come near her home, come by her house, that she was going to shoot her. Debbie had had conversations and confrontations with her sister previously, where her sister had indicated similar words, that she would shoot her, cause her harm if she would come by. So clearly there was a disharmonious relationship between these two sisters. But in the conversation,
but
she
Gomez never interviewed the son, and certainly their estrangement since 2001 could also cut against her reliability, given their history.
That's right? True, but given the other information that Officer Gomez gathered in the context of his investigation, he believed her to be truthful. He believed her to be a person who was in fear of her own safety, and that her concern was is to get these guns out of the hands of her sister, who's a known felon. And yes, Zachariah, her son...
A known felon? What, she had this ancient...
20...
Yeah, ancient conviction, like known felon.
A conviction that was entered many years before, but...
Yeah, hardly made it. It wasn't for a crime of violence either.
But according to the state of Wisconsin and the statute
use a little bit of imagination, couldn't they?
But in the state of Wisconsin, the statute would...
Why on earth did they decide to enter this house at night?
Well, that particular issue is relevant to the decision-making by the Tactical Enforcement Unit,
I'm just asking you, it's so goofy. It obviously increases the danger to everybody.
Officer Gomez was not responsible for that decision-making.
I know that.
And with
I'm asking you what sense it makes for the police in these circumstances to enter this, I'm breaking a window and entering at night?
My understanding is that
the most irresponsible police conduct.
Rather, the Tactical Enforcement Unit is a very highly trained unit. They make decisions.
It may be highly trained, but it doesn't seem to have any brains.
Well, they make decisions whereby they believe that they will...
Now, what sense does it make to break into a person's house at night when you think they're armed?
In this particular matter, the timing was relative to when the people would be less aware of or at a more disadvantageous position to the officers when the officers were making contact. That was part of their factor, or their factors.
Also, what are they doing in the city of Franklin? They're supposed to be the Milwaukee police.
They are Milwaukee police. Debbie Capel lived in the city of Milwaukee.
Franklin have its own police force?
It does, and City of Franklin police officers were on location outside when the warrant was executed. This is part of a larger matter that was being conducted by the Office of the District Attorney with several law enforcement agencies involved. It was part of a basically get the guns off of the street program, gun enforcement program back in 2006, which at that time was...
On the street.
I'm sorry?
Guns were in the bedroom and elsewhere in the house.
With regard to this particular matter and the Wisconsin statute that established the crime, which was being investigated by Officer Gomez, there was no differentiation between someone who was convicted of a felony last year versus someone who was convicted of a felony 20 years ago.
Do you acknowledge that there are errors in his affidavit, Gomez's affidavit?
Do
you acknowledge that there are errors in the affidavit? It's a simple question.
I do not believe that there are errors.
See, that's a yes or no question. No mistakes in his affidavit.
No, there are inconsistencies in the statement of the complaining witness sometime later.
Inconsistencies that suggest a mistake, doesn't it?
But it doesn't indicate who made the mistake.
Well, I don't understand. I asked you whether the affidavit contains mistakes. You said no. Now you say it contains inconsistencies.
I would assert that the mistakes or inconsistencies are in Ms. Capel's testimony 3 years later.
No, I'm asking what's in the affidavit.
What's in the affidavit is information which avers that Ms. Becker was in possession of a firearm and also that there were circumstances...
And you said there are no mistakes in the affidavit.
Correct. Officer Gomez prepared that affidavit in good faith upon information and belief.
That's a different question. The question is whether there are mistakes in the affidavit. Good faith is a different
question. There were not mistakes. There were mistakes, we believe, with regard to Ms. Capel's testimony that she gave 3 years later. And with regard to this particular matter, given the totality of the circumstances in evaluating the affidavit and the information contained therein, I believe that the court needs to take into consideration the human factor involved with police work. Here you have police officers who are taking statements from witnesses. They're taking that information, taking notes, then later taking those notes and presenting those notes in the format of an affidavit or a report, something of that nature that will be filed. there could have been misunderstanding with regard to the officer's perceptions of what was being said, most notably with the information about whether or not someone had seen the weapon in the house within 5 days of the particular date of the affidavit. Now, Officer Gomez believed that Ms. Capel told him that she had seen it. Ms. Capel, in her deposition, said, no, I didn't say that I said it. I told the officer that our friend, Mr. Adker, had seen the gun in the house. But that is in addition to the fact that Ms. Capel clearly indicated that she had seen the handgun in the area of Ms. Becker's bed, her side of the bed. She'd also seen a handgun in Ms. Becker's microwave cabinet, and Ms. Becker had indicated to her that she would use that weapon if there were anybody in their yard doing any unlawful things with regard to their property.
So your position is that even though opposing counsel characterizes that inconsistency as a lie on the part of Gomez, or Gomez being untruthful, that it was either some problem with drafting it or something like that. So that's why you're saying it's just inconsistent.
Absolutely. There is the possibility.
So you're not conceding that he was lying or that he misrepresented.
Correct. There is absolutely the potential that in the perception and in the preparation of the document, there was a misperception of what was told
him. You didn't say in your brief that the affidavit was accurate. You said it wasn't so plainly deficient that he should have known that it was no good. But you admit there are errors in it, right?
There are errors or discrepancies with regard to Ms. Capel's statement later. But with regard to the totality of the circumstances, the information that was given to Officer Gomez that Ms. Capel testified to later, she stated that she knew of someone who had been in the house 5 days earlier and seen the weapon. She indicated that she had seen a weapon being kept on the bed, on the side of the bed where Mrs. Becker slept. She indicated that Mrs. Becker had threatened her and threatened to shoot her should she come near her house. And so I believe all of those circumstances taken together establish that Officer Gomez did not act in bad faith. There cannot be an inference that he acted in bad faith simply because his complaining witness, 3 years later in the context of a deposition, changes her the statements that she gave and changes the information that she provided. But even in her deposition, she indicates and she confirms that she saw the weapon, and the weapon was in a location that was within an area within the control of Mrs. Becker. And given that this is an affidavit in support of a search warrant and that the officer is not required to prove the crime, rather he has to establish his belief that there's probable cause of the likelihood that criminal activity is occurring, that this affidavit meets that standard, meets that burden. And especially taking into consideration the totality of these circumstances, the statements provided by Ms. Capel, and there is no indication that the officer knew the Beckers, had any problem with the Beckers, had any personal motivation for falsifying an affidavit.
So you deny that Capel told Gomez that she hadn't been in the house for years?
She confirmed in her deposition that she hadn't been in the house for years. When she gave her statement to Officer Gomez, he did not have that understanding from what she told him. He understood her to say that she had been in the house as recently as within 5 days prior to the date that he drafted the affidavit.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Lappin. Ms. Reyes?
Good morning, Your Honors. Attorney Lappin has framed the issue for you today as whether or not the single instance that a complaining witness changes their testimony 3 years later is sufficient to defeat Officer Gomez's request for qualified immunity, and I respectfully submit that the answer to that question is yes, pursuant to Lawson versus Baracci, a case in this court as recent as last year, where there are a complaining witness changes their testimony, and again, that's an allegation that this testimony has changed from what she told Officer Gomez in that 3 years. That is enough. To make the appellee's prima facie case in opposition to the officer's request for qualified immunity. To defeat Officer Gomez's request, Mr. Becker must meet an incredibly high standard because qualified immunity protects all but the plainly incompetent and those who knowingly violate the law. And I would respectfully submit to this court that whether Officer Gomez is entitled to immunity is not even a close call. Mr. Boettker has identified, has made his prima facie case by identifying substantial evidence in this record which establishes that Officer Gomez knowingly included false statements in his affidavit in support
of
the search warrant.
So if we agree with you that he knew that, and we eliminate those quote false statements and omissions, we still have left the fact that Debbie identified the dark-colored semi-automatic handgun, the location, said that Richard kept rifles, told Gomez that Sharon was a convicted felon. Why wasn't that enough probable cause?
Because
Sharon was a convicted felon in possession of a firearm.
Because probable cause in this instance was not probable cause that there was a gun in Sharon Boettker's home. Probable cause, according to the Wisconsin statutes, was that Sharon Boettker was in actual physical control of a firearm, or the firearm was located in a place in her home in which she had actual control over and intended to exercise control over. There is absolutely no evidence in...
So the testimony, his report that the gun was hanging, you know, the holster and the gun were right on the bed, that would...
That wasn't even included in his affidavit, Your Honor. He simply stated that there was excising the false statements, the only statements that were left in the affidavit is that Richard Boettker was a hunter, allegedly hunted illegally. There was mounts in the home.
But I thought the affidavit made some reference to the likely location of this dark-colored semi-automatic handgun.
My recall is that it did not, Your Honor. I could be mistaken in that, but the only... I don't believe that he indicated that it was located in a pillow or in a holster near the bed. And for the record, Ms. Capel also, in her deposition testimony, denied ever saying that it was underneath her pillow, underneath Sharon's pillow, and identified. Yeah, she denied that that she told Officer Gomez a gun was located under Sharon's pillow.
Well, the affidavit says that the informant has observed Boettker in possession or control of at least one handgun. Is your notion that that's too vague?
My notion is that that's simply a false statement. I mean, Ms. Capel...
Did he know it was false? He's just reporting what was told him.
We don't have to... In order to meet our burden, Your Honor, we don't have to show that Officer Boettker knew that the statements were false. Obviously, states of mind can only be proven circumstantially. And
how can he be sued if he puts in an affidavit, he says, a known citizen witness who wished to remain anonymous stated within the last 5 days she'd observed Boettker in possession or control of at least one handgun. If he has no reason to doubt her truthfulness, and he's just repeating what she told him, how could that be a basis for a judgment against him?
Well, Your Honor, we're arguing that he had several reasons to doubt Ms. Capel's credibility, which he didn't act on.
What's the greatest reason?
The greatest reason is that in the first phone call that Ms. Capel had with Officer Gomez, she identified to him that she had reasons to burn Sharon Boettker. She told him that she was afraid of being seen as wanting to burn Sharon Boettker. Pursuant to the cases that we've cited in our brief, the reasonableness, the test, under the Fourth Amendment is a reasonableness standard. And where someone identifies to an officer that they have a grudge against a person and that forms the basis for their complaint to the officer, that should, light a bulb above the officer's head. And in that instance, he has a duty to further investigate that situation.
How is he going to do that?
He's going to call Zachariah Hamburg and say, hey, did your mom threaten Sharon Boettker? And he never did.
Their house. How is he supposed to investigate that?
Investigate what specifically?
He can't go in. He can't barge into the house to look for the gun. So how is he going to investigate what Capel told him?
He's going to call the person that she says is making the threats. He's going to investigate more than just the address that she gave. He's going to investigate the allegations about illegal hunting. She identified that Richard was an illegal hunter, and the only evidence that he came up with is that he had warrants from the DNR to legally hunt, and that he had allegedly killed a coyote, but Officer Gomez couldn't in his deposition identify where that information came from. He could have called the person who was the basis for the information about the handgun, Mr. William Acker, or the person that was the second-hand source of the information, Mr. Dennis Hamburg.
Gramino's case of many years ago, but I'm sure many others since, said that you can arrest a person on the basis of one eyewitness complaint.
That's true, Your Honor, but in looking back at, you know, the reasonableness of whether or not you can rely on a witness, there are several factors that have been identified in the Junkert case that Ms. Lappin is relying on, including she's cited to this court many times in her argument today that Debbie said that she saw the gun. She saw the gun in the bed and in the microwave. That was 5 years earlier. There's a lapse of 5 years in between the time that Debbie Capel supposedly saw these guns in the Betker home and the time that she's telling Officer Gomez. That is
I'm not saying she isn't lying, but she didn't tell Gomez that she hadn't seen the guns for 5 years.
She says that she did, and that's the basis for this. It's not the province of this court to make a credibility determination on summary judgment as to whether Ms. Capel is now lying today or at the time of her deposition, or if she was lying at the time that she spoke to Mr. Gomez.
It doesn't matter whether she's lying. All that matters is whether he believed her, right? Or are you saying...
What matters is that if a reasonable officer, a reasonable, well-trained officer...
Are you saying that she told him that she hadn't seen the guns for 5 years?
I am saying that. She explicitly testified in her deposition that she had a conversation with Officer Gomez where he told her, I need to know if the guns were in the house in the past 5 days, and she said, I cannot tell you that. But Dennis talked to William, and William said there were guns in the house.
And so when you look at the affidavit, the whole five-year thing doesn't come up because it says the witness who wishes to remain anonymous stated within the last 5 days the informant has observed Becker in possession of at least one handgun, and that's where the dispute is because she would characterize it as a some kind of misstatement in the affidavit because... You know, it was actually the garage sale or something. Somebody else saw it, but it was within the 5 days, and so that's where sort of the conflicting testimony comes about. Didn't that come out in the affidavits later that someone had actually seen it within 5 days? It turns out it wasn't the informant, but it was someone else who had seen it within 5 days that would then make it timely and deal with it.
That's not true, Your Honor. There's no evidence in this record that anyone saw Sharon Becker in possession of a handgun in 5 days before the warrant was executed. This is all Ms. Capel's testimony saying that she said that Dennis Hamburg told her that William Acker told him that he went to a garage sale and no guns were sold there, so therefore there must still be guns in the Becker home. From the same guns that were there 5 years earlier. There's absolutely no evidence in this record that Sharon Becker ever had possession of a handgun. And I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Reese. Ms. Lappin?
So why don't you start with that point?
Ms. Capel testified that in her deposition that she called the detective and told him that a mutual friend of hers and her sister's had been at the house over the weekend and had seen the weapons there in the context of some public rummage sale that was going on. And so that's what she claimed in her deposition. The officer's recollection was that when he was interviewing her at the time that he was investigating this matter, that she told him that she had been the one to be at the house to see the weapons. That's the inconsistency.
So there's not this, what she's trying... Counsel tried to suggest it was very circular in that since there was an absence of guns at the rummage sale, then therefore the guns had to be in the house. But
Right.
That's not what you're saying the deposition
Correct. Said. Ms. Capel in her deposition says that, no, it wasn't her that saw the gun, that this mutual friend, Mr. Acker, had seen the gun, and she reported that to Detective Gomez. So it wasn't like Detective Gomez had no information indicating that no one had seen a gun within the last 5 days. The question as to whether or not Debbie told him this at the time of his investigation or whether she told him a mutual friend had seen it. But the affidavit, the primary assertion here, where the affidavit describes Ms. Betker and that she's a felon and notes that she's reported to be in possession of at least one handgun, a dark-colored semi-automatic handgun at her residence. And when we move toward determining whether or not Officer Gomez was acting in bad faith, we can look at the totality of the circumstances. And given these statements, given his discretion as a police officer, the fact that he's taking information, he's relaying that information to his notes, then preparing affidavit, sure, there is the opportunity or room for human error and mistake on his part. But his belief was that she had told him that she had been in the home and she had seen that gun within 5 days. And that's in addition to her statements that she had seen it there before, she had seen it by Sharon's bedside, she had seen this gun in the microwave cabinet, et cetera, and the fact that threats were being made. So the totality of the circumstances established, I believe, that Officer Gomez was acting in good faith. There's no evidence that he acted in bad faith or that he, in fact, knew or doubted what he was putting into that affidavit. And I just want to point out, with regard to the Lawson case doesn't just involve a witness who later changes a statement. The Lawson case involves someone who states that she was, an assault victim. She claims that she told the investigating detective that, a particular person in a photo array was the guy who assaulted her, but that the detective or investigating officer flipped over a different picture and had her sign the back of that picture to indicate that that was the guy who assaulted her. It wasn't just her statement later that, no, I didn't point out that person, I pointed out a different person. In addition to her change in statement, there also was the photo array with her signature and the photographs of the people that were involved. And there was another witness, I believe it was her mother or a family member, who was with her when she was present for that photo array, who corroborated that, yes, the victim did point out this particular photo, but the officer flipped over a different photo and had her sign that. So it wasn't just the statement and the discrepancies in the statement in the Lawson case. There was other evidence and information which helped corroborate that. And I think that's very significant.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Lappin. Next case.